Blog Talk Radio.
I was raised in a cow town. The Bible Belt had me tied down. I told myself I would leave one day, but then she came along and here I stayed. The stockyard breeze is rolling in. That's the smell of money in the wind. There's hailstorms and tumbleweed. No wonder there ain't no Cadillac Ranch. You can paint a caddy with a spray can. Sure ain't the promised land. They bury perfectly good cars in the sand. It's their way to say that you won't get away. No. Nothing that you can do about the Cowtown Blues. The Cowtown Blues. I met her at the public pool in the summer after high school. We didn't make any college plans, too busy with the idol. Youngest kid, a sweet face and a body made for sin. Far from the deep blue sea, just her, the devil, and me. One night I got the call. She hung a cross on her bedroom wall, then said she was done with me if I didn't get down on. Baby's in love with Jesus. She'd rather save herself than save us. Oh. There's nothing that you can do about the Cowtown Blues. The Cowtown.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio Independent Music Showcase. This is November the 7th, 2018. My special guest tonight is James Lee Baker. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
It's great to have you on, man. That's a great song. Would you like to talk about that before we get too far into the interview? I mean, is that, how did you write, what's behind writing that? Is that a true story? Talk to the audience about that. Cowtown Blues.
Great question. It's a mix of truth and fiction. Truth is, the song's about my hometown, Amarillo, Texas. And there's a lot of elements about that song that are characteristic of the, you know, the environment, you know, the feedlots and the hailstorms and tumbleweeds and that sort of thing, the Cadillac Ranch. And so I wanted to write a song about growing up in this small town environment and being feeling like there's this desire, need to move on or get out. Also, the, I guess the fiction aspect of that is I'm in a relationship, or the character is in a relationship with someone who is a preacher's daughter, and obviously they're being promiscuous, and she has a change of heart. So it just was something I wanted to throw in there, given the religious nature of that part of the country, and bringing, I thought it was just me having fun, poking fun at the subject.
How is it easy to sing or to write songs, James, for you? I know it's different for every songwriter, and every songwriter approaches songwriting differently. But for you, do you write about personal things, and do you have a problem with that? Some people don't have a problem with it. They'll write about anything that happens to them, and it's really interesting and autobiographical. But how about with you? I mean, how do you approach that? Do you write things that are true to you and personal to you, and is that easy to do?
Well, as an artist, we are a medium for something. And it is through our, you know, artistic ability, whatever that might be, whether it's music or painting or what, that we express ourselves. You know, some people express, you know, introspectively, and the majority of artists, particularly musicians today, tend to produce artwork introspectively. You know, that's why the breakup song is so popular. But I think for me it's a combination of both. And I think seasoned artists, they have something to offer the world through extrospection, looking out at the world and telling a story of someone else that hasn't been told. So I think for me it's both. Introspective songs tend to be more they tend to be easier to write because there's a lot of fodder there, you know, in the subject.
Right.
But extrospective songs about the world and about other people, take a little bit more thought and care, because it requires the artist to put themselves in the shoes of someone else, and in some ways be like a method actor, becoming the character to understand their plight.
Now, how about that makes sense. I mean, I've talked to people that just recently, I love James talking to songwriters and asking them about their craft, but it's never, you know, the same thing. I just recently was talking to someone who was saying that they're as surprised as anyone when a song comes to them. It's given to them. They get it. It's like receiving it. They look at it. They apply their talents. They apply their musical abilities. They write the song. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Some people say, you know, I sit down and work on it. You know, I work on a melody or a riff or lyrics. How does James Lee Baker approach songwriting?
I think both. Again, I've had both experiences. I've been sitting down and come up with some idea, felt compelled to sit down and write it. And once I started writing it out and I felt like I started to have something, the rest of it just kind of came. And I feel like those songs have a lot of power to them, because I think you know inside that you want to say something before that happens. You feel compelled. It's like bottling up. You know, and I feel it from time to time, and then eventually something comes out, and it comes out quickly. And the other aspect of that is there have been times where I felt compelled to write the material to write, and so I start pulling from different things in my life or different things I want to write about. You know, for example, I'm working on an idea for a song right now for Santa Barbara, California, because it's one of my favorite places that I've ever visited. I just, there's something about the city that's just magical to me. So, but there's, I don't have anything I want to write about. I just wanted to write something about Santa Barbara. And so I've been doing a lot of research on the city and the city's history, and figuring out that it has a really rich and diverse history. And so, you know, sometimes you've got to be methodical about it, and come up with material beyond just the muse of inspiration.
Now, you talked about this city, and you grew up in Amarillo, and you're talking about California and totally different vibes there. Does geography play a part, James, in that? Because I've asked this also when I'm trying to pick songwriters' brains and find out how they tick and what makes them, you know, create. I've asked them, okay, so you're in Seattle, and then, you know, do you like feel different there? And if you were in Paris or if you were in Stockholm or somewhere, is that being in a different geography influence your songwriting? Has that done that with you?
Not so much location as culture. You know, when I go to Paris and I'm standing, I've been to Paris, and I distinctly remember when I was in Paris. I don't know where I was. I may have been at the Champ de Mars or somewhere near the Eiffel Tower or something, in the park. And I just remember thinking, this feels just like home. I mean, the grass is green, the sky is blue. I feel like I'm just in another place. So the places aren't really impactful. What's impactful for me is the people and the culture. Once you get to know the people of Amarillo, for example, you can understand Cowtown Blues really well. There's a lot of inside jokes to that. Like, for example, we have a phrase, you know, when we smell cow dung in the air, we say that's the smell of money, because that's how the area's industry is making money. So I threw that in the song, and for people in the area, they get a kick out of that. But for when I go play it on the East Coast or something, not so much, you know, because they don't have feedlots, you know, and a cloud of smell hovering over their city. So I think for me, it's first just about understanding the culture. And I had the opportunity to live in California for a few years. I've also lived in Colorado. And so understanding those cultures and the environment a little bit deeper is really where I think the inspiration is.
Yeah, and that song kind of stood out to me because I'm from right outside of Columbus, Ohio, and they call Columbus Cowtown. That's its nickname. And it's funny because, I worked for IBM, when people would come in to town, and Ohio State University is right there in Columbus and right by the airports, and people would come in and they would, of course, Ohio State, James, is a huge agricultural school, and they would drive right by all these cows and these fields. And it was like, you know, it got the name of Cowtown. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It never has bothered me, the smell, like you're saying, because I'm just used to it. I grew up in a rural area in the country, a little small town. And I think that's really, you know, an interesting point where you're bringing those things that mean something to you that may not mean something to someone else. But you're keeping it, you know, going and keeping it alive in your music. And I think that's really good. Have you always felt like that's something? When did you first, I'll rephrase that. When did you first know, James, that you could write songs? And do you remember like the first song you wrote?
I think that I started writing poetry before I started writing songs. I've always had a creative nature. Ever since I was a little kid, I used to do those little online art catalog courses, you know, that they'd sell through the TV or magazines. And, you know, as I got older, I did all sorts of other artistic things. So there was always, I think, a source, an unending source, a spring or a well, if you will, of creativity that's permeated my life. So at some point in time in middle school, high school, I started writing poetry, and mostly as just a way to like express my frustrations. And in a completely organic state, you know, in a complete vacuum, my 12-year-old son, without any foreknowledge of me doing that myself, has started doing it himself.
That's awesome.
So it's very, I think that's, yeah, it's cool. So I think there is this certain desire or need to start being creative. And I think the poetry is a nice gateway. It was a good gateway for me to start writing songs because I really just had to apply the poetry in a way that added music as an extra dimension. So I started writing songs when I was 16.
Okay.
I don't really remember the first song that I wrote. I think one of the first songs that I wrote, I ended up playing at my high school talent show when I was 17. And I think it was called As Sweet as the Sky or something. And I went and looked, my sister came to like my birthday party or something last year, and she brought me this CDR. And it was a handwritten CDR that I had given her like 10 years ago of all these songs. And I put it in the car, and yeah, every single song was awful, but it was cool to see, you know, the kind of person that I was then and what I had learned in a decade.
That's really awesome. I love that. There's a couple of things I want to talk about through what you said. You talked about being creative and expressing yourself through poetry. And I think that's so important for kids today to be able to do that. And to know that it really means something. It's not like an extracurricular thing. It's not like a side project. It can be real. It can be something that can really help people develop and build on their character and confidence. And I think, did you find that when you were growing up, James, that by doing that, by writing poetry and then seeing that you could do that, that was something that was personal to you and creative, that gave you confidence to keep on creating things?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
And you see that now with your son doing that. What do you think the importance of education right now, art is in education, whether it would be poetry, whether it would be music, whether it would be anything like that, any type of artistic expression, how important do you think that is in a child's curriculum right now?
Well, I think it's vastly undervalued. You know, if we live in a consumer-based society, I could be the conspiracy theorist or the jaded one, and or you know whatever, and say if we took all of the currency away and everybody just lived without, you know, this need to constantly consume, what would we have left? You know, because everything that we learn about is driving us closer to being injected into that system to become a, you know, a software engineer or a bus driver or something like that. But when we strip all that away and, you know, we go back to the basics, we realize that art, creativity is fundamentally what nature is and what nature does. You know, I think life, one of the primary motivations of life is to create. And there's this incessant desire in all of us to do that. I think probably to persist. You know, that's pretty esoteric, but I think it's the creativity that's more valuable ultimately than whether or not you can solve complex math equations. So certainly it's benefited our society in many ways, technology and all of these other things, but if you go back into history and you look at societies like the Egyptians, they valued the arts. It was one of the highest valued roles that someone could play. So I think I think art is undervalued in today's society, and I think that I think from an education standpoint, certainly deserving of more attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so too. I think about a couple of things. You're talking about expressing yourself. I interviewed this incredible singer, and she's also a principal at a high school in New York, and Kelly Gerling, and she was talking about working with kids and how that sometimes they can't get kids to really fit in, and they like are very hard to get them in classrooms, get them to participate and all that kind of stuff. So what they were doing, and I think you probably heard of this, but I thought it was pretty cool. They have them be artistic with like just a palette and let them start writing their feelings down on a palette or a painting or drawing. And no matter what it is, whether it's anger, fear, all these things, and they would paint these pictures, James, and then that would kind of like bring this out, and they could analyze where the kids were, and then they could also work with their talents. Is that something you think that you've heard of, or you think is kind of cool? Because I apply that also to music. If you have a young person that maybe is having some trouble, you know, fitting into society or whatever, and they start working with art or with music, and it might be really abusive type stuff, and it might not be that interesting to somebody else, but it might be really expressing, even though if it's something that is not acceptable. Do you think that's important, even in music, to let the kids like express themselves like that?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It's I think you touched the vein. We teach people every day not to be transparent about the problems that they face in society. We don't want to hear about it. We want to surround ourselves around good vibes and good people. But we all have these problems, and we all have them in the dark. And our art is an outlet for that. Even if you're struggling with anything, you could put it into a song, and it's acceptable as a form of catharsis. Because now society sees it as art, and it's sort of encoded into this acceptable thing that was once not acceptable in, say, regular conversation or relationship. So I think it is it's a way for people to express both positive and negative experiences in a way that makes them less likely to be cast out from a group. You know, or shamed or ostracized or whatever.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think what happens sometimes is they can't really lock into something that they feel like they're worth something. It's like I'm not worth anything to anybody. Nobody really cares. So what difference does it make? And so they, you know, get into things they can't sometimes get out of. And there's a project in Columbus, Ohio called the Dick and Jane Project. I don't know if you've heard of it or not, or if it's around in Texas or wherever, but in the inner city in Columbus, they have a fraternity of musicians, and they've all gotten together of all types of rap, metal, folk, rock, everything you can think of all these musicians in Columbus. And they go into the inner city schools where these kids are having trouble, and they have them write, like you're talking about poetry, they have them write the lyrics, and then they take it into the studio with the kids, and these musicians make it into a song, and it gets recorded. And I think that's such a cool thing, because it like has turned these kids around. It's like they're thinking, my gosh, that was me. I actually did that, you know? And I think that is such a cool thing. I think that's what you're talking about a lot, where, you know, they might have feelings and might not know who to talk to, but art is such a great expression. What do you think of that project? Do you think that's a worthy thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I've never heard of it, so I don't know how far reaching it is, but yeah, I remember when I was a kid, being exposed to talented people and how inspiring it was to see that somebody could do something like that. I think art's more accessible to the senses than the talents of, say, a surgeon or the talents of, a software engineer. Once you get into those fields and you understand them a little bit better, I imagine that they would be fascinating. But on the surface, it's hard to inspire people with things like that. But art, it's very forward facing, so it's easily capable of inspiring people to try something or to change something about themselves or to express something.
My guest tonight is James Lee Baker, and you can go on his website, jamesleebaker.com. And if I got this right, your latest EP is The Canadian River. Is that correct? I think we'll play the title track from that. Would you like to talk about that, James?
Sure. So The Canadian River is a tributary of the Red River, I believe, in the Texas Panhandle. It is about 45 minutes north of my hometown, and is a place that is frequented by the locals for recreation and relaxation. The riverbed is primarily clay based, so the river itself is really red. And so that was an exercise, sort of like you know, how we were talking earlier about do we write songs. Do songs come to us or do we write them methodically? And the Canadian River was more of a methodical idea. I wanted to write about the river. I wanted to talk about its volume. And I started doing a lot of free writing, describing the environment and the sort of things that take place there. And I had pages of just me writing just letting all of these thoughts out. And what came from that was this line, like the river is my church. And I realized from that, that there was an opportunity there to talk about something that's, near and dear to my life, which is my departure from organized religion and, finding God in my own interpretations as an adult. And that's sort of where the song was born, is this idea that, modern religion is not an effective tool for a lot of people. And it's really for those people out there that I wrote that song for, hoping they can relate to the idea that you can go anywhere in the world and have a relationship with whatever you deem to be your creator or not. So that's really the source of this song.
Well, let's play it. This is James Lee Baker, The Canadian River, and we'll be right back with the rest of the interview with James right after this.
Water tower town, the steeples light up as the sun goes down, and every business is closed in the name of the Lord, except for the Christian bookstores. It's only an hour's drive from my front door to my favorite spot near the river shore. Pack the back of my short bed secondhand truck. If I leave right now, I'll get there before dusk. Oh, the Milky Way my canopy, and the only one holding me is gravity. The river the Canadian River. Wash my shortcomings away. But don't get me wrong, I believe that inner voice, but I also believe in a world of choice. If you were God and you made the birds and the sky, wouldn't you wanna see them fly? I lay my head down and I close my eyes, and I am back. Where I come to pray, I am standing faint, my knees in the clay. When I seek forgiveness from all of my mistakes, I let the Canadian River wash my shortcomings.
Welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio tonight. This is November the 11th, 2018. My special guest, James Lee Baker. We're listening to music from his latest EP, The Canadian River. That's a great song. James did really nice vocals on that. It's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the making of the EP and walking us through that, the selection of the songs, the studio, the musicians that helped you out. Talk about that, because I think that sometimes people just take that for granted, and they see a CD or they see files, James, and they just think, oh, they magically appear. But they're a lot of work, and they take time. Could you walk us through that?
Yeah. Well, so in 2017, in December, I released an album called Home Again. And Home Again was a full-length album. But I had been spending a lot more time in the folk community, and I realized that the majority of the content on that album was more Americana country. So I released an EP of four songs from the LP, and three of those songs are also found on the LP. I redid the Canadian River to make it a little bit more folk oriented, and so I say all of that because the process for all of this started with the LP in December. As far as the process was concerned, I started out wanting to put out an EP, but the more I started digging through my catalog of things that I had been writing over the years, the more I realized I had enough material for a 10-song project. So I started working with a producer, his name's Christopher Bloom. He's based out of Denver. And he's got years of experience mixing and mastering and producing all sorts of artists. And he's also a good friend of mine. So I would fly up to Denver from Texas two or three times a year, and we would record two or three songs at a time. But the process was really different. Prior, I'd always work with him, and he'd just hire out session musicians, and they might come in their own time, and I would just go in for vocals and guitar, and then I would leave. But with this project, I wanted to have a more focused role, a more important role in the production of these songs. So I started finding session musicians online on websites like Fiverr.com and a few other places. And it's amazing how, I could pay somebody anywhere from $50 to $150 for an instrument. And they would provide, within a day or two, they would provide me with several takes of their instrument, whatever that might be. And then we just fold it into the song and see how it fits.
Wow.
And so that was really the process for these songs. And I never met those artists. I've never met them to this day. There's many session musicians that I've never met. So I think that's a cool aspect, because I was able to get a 10-song EP produced under, I would say under like $7,500, which is pretty amazing.
Wow. Yes.
At that caliber, the quality of the album. I think regardless if you like the songs or not, we all agree, and everyone I ever talk to agrees, that the mixing and mastering and production on that album is professional. It's very well done. So I think that says a lot about where we're headed in the industry and the technology that we have access to.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because I've talked to a lot of people that have traded files, like people from England that have worked with people in Nashville and they've never met, and they trade files back and forth and make really cool music. But I wasn't really aware of the process, like you said, it through Fiverr.com. What do you think of that? What do you think of the technical part of it? Do you think that's I would imagine you really like it, but I mean, it's one of those things where do you think there's anything missing, James, with not sitting down in a studio with musicians? Or do you think it's just the way that we're going now, technically?
That's a great question, because I will be figuring that out. January, I'm going to record a few songs with someone I've never worked with before, who has a pretty awesome reputation in Austin, but he does organic recordings. Every session musician is present, and we record everything at once, and then we do overdubs as needed. He believes that's a more cohesive experience. And it's more natural. I've never done that before with session musicians. I've always done overdubs with everything. But you're right. I did feel that way when I was going through this project, was that I didn't really have a strong influence in the moment for what a session musician was going to record. I just had to trust their ability. I think when you get up to a certain caliber of session musicians, granted those guys maybe $200 to $300 an hour, $500 a day, those sort of guys that work in Nashville and other places, it doesn't matter where they're at. They're so good at what they do that they're going to listen to the song once, and then they're going to lay something down and send it over. So I think it's a complicated answer, but it really depends upon the caliber of the session musicians. I've had the opportunity to work with somebody out of the UK. His name's Toby Wilson, and he's a multi instrumentalist, and he actually did most of the instrumentation on this project in terms of dobro and lap steel, pedal steel, mandolin, those sort of things. And he's a beast. He's a cool guy, and I'll send him a track, and in 24 hours, he'll send me back three instruments, and I've rarely had to retrack anything. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It just fits the first time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like what you were talking about with the organic way of recording, because I think I'm not an engineer. I don't know that stuff. I don't know, you know, what it's like to go in and work with people like that. But I do know that sometimes when you play live and you play in the studio, you know, sometimes people want to hear live what they hear on the record. And then sometimes they don't. Sometimes they want to hear something completely different. So, James, when you go into the studio or when you're working with the session musicians, are you thinking about how that song's going to translate live or not? Or does that even come into the equation?
It used to not matter as much. And I think that was a mistake I made early on. So I didn't know it was a mistake. I would go into the studio and we'd lay down, you know, all sorts of things, and it would sound great. The song itself would sound great. But when I would go out and perform the song live, I didn't have a band with me, and the song would fall flat. I wouldn't have the impact on the listener that I did on the album. And so I've done a few things to compensate for that, and one is stripping the recordings down, like you're talking about, which really these live performances would foster that very well, because this is the way it was performed. We're more likely to perform that same style or approach with that song on stage. But the other aspect of it is the writing. When you take all of the production out of a song and you strip it down to something that's organic and emphasizes the artist more, now the onus is on the artist to be more profound, to be more dynamic. And that's really where the writing helps, because if you don't have this strong, like, large production of a song, you're more likely going to have an opportunity to impact people with your words. And I think that's just the nature of folk and Americana these days, which is inherently stripped down.
Now, when you were growing, you said you grew up in Amarillo, in that area?
Yes.
Okay, so your influences were what? Who were your influences, and what type of music were you listening to growing up?
Well, a lot of influences. Every member of my family is musical. My brother is a tuba player. My mom was a guitar player. My father was a drummer. My grandfather was a concert pianist. My grandmother wrote gospel songs. So music was, like, pervasive in my life. It was everywhere. And as such, I listened to everything. My father, you know, metaphorically spoon-fed me classic rock. And I know more about classic rock than most people my age. You know, the whole catalog of Rush, Journey, and Styx, and Chicago, and all Cheech and Chong. I mean, all of these things I learned as a child. And so that was a huge influence on me. But I didn't really see the profoundness of certain classic rock artists, namely like Rush and their lyrical impact, until I became an adult. But I started getting into country when I was young. I'm not sure why, maybe the sensitivity of it at the time. The country songs of the 90s were really, I think, a really good shining time for the industry, for that genre. So I'd listen to artists like Garth Brooks, who's a really talented performer, and then George Strait and Diamond Rio and all these other artists. But I think I started coming into my own when I was about 15 or 16 in terms of music taste. I still listened to everything from Metallica to Garth Brooks, you know, to Frank Sinatra.
Right.
But I really started connecting with the folk scene. I discovered artists like John Gorka, Ellis Paul, Patty Griffin, and David Gray in the UK. And those are the artists that I found on my own, by myself, and still listen to them to this day. But what I loved about them was the stories that they had to tell. And I wanted to be like that. So I think that's really why I gravitate towards it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because I was thinking about, you know, all the things that, like, your family and all the things that were coming to you and then also the culture. And you were talking about, we were talking about geography and culture of the area. And I would imagine, you know, Texas swing music and country music had to be really big. And, but you kind of stood up on your own 2 feet and, you know, made your own decisions on what you were going to sound like, you know, what James Lee Baker was going to sound like, which is cool. Let's play Two Cageless Birds. That's also from the Canadian River EP. And talk about that, James, and then we'll play it.
Sure. Yeah, so that song seems to be doing well. It's a, I guess it's a silent one in that it's not something that I've been actively promoting until recently. But it wanted the John O'Hara Songwriting Performance Grant earlier this year.
Wow,
I was given a grant by somebody. Thank you. And so it's, I think it connects with certain, you know, with some people, and it's doing really well on Spotify right now. So the song itself is just is a song about a mature relationship, a long-term relationship. There's a lot of songs about new love, and I wanted to write something about a couple that had been together for a while and talk about still how much they loved each other. So I wanted to focus on more mature details of the song, like the way that somebody sleeps or the way they breathe when they sleep or, you know, touching the bottom of their feet, holding a teacup and, you know, those sort of like details, you know, I wanted to paint that tenderness. And I think that's where the song was born.
Well, this is Two Cageless Birds, and this is James Lee Baker, and we'll be right back.
Dropping my teacup and one rested on the palms of your feet. I love the way you make believe I rescued you from far away and brought you here this fairy tale, then traded my horse for this place.
as careless as when you found me. Two cageless birds of springtime, so young and full of mystery. And I know the search was worth the wait, as hard as it might have been. Battles of my youth, I'd fight for you all over again. Oh my dear, since you came into my life, I know what living is, 'cause you make me feel
And that's Two Cageless Birds. That's James Lee Baker from his latest EP, which is The Canadian River. And you can go on James's website, jamesleebaker.com. Well, James, it's been great having you on. I really appreciate it. Your music is great. You're a really talented person, and I really appreciate your music and you being on the show tonight. And is there anything you would like to say to the audience or any projects or anything going on that I've missed that you would like to talk about?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, John, and for the kind words. The next few months are going to be fun and interesting. I'm going to wind down for the holidays, of course, but before I do, I'm going to the New England Regional Folk Alliance, which is starting tomorrow. So I'll be in Connecticut. Basically, that's just a place for artists and vendors to go to exchange information and spend a lot of time performing. So I think I have 7 showcases in 3 days.
Wow.
Once we're done with that, the next big thing is in January. I'll be going into the studio to record 3 songs with Chris Bell in Austin, Texas at Blue Rock Studios. And then I'll be releasing those songs over time as singles, and then we'll likely begin some like low budget but still high quality music videos, and then in March going to New York City to work with Least of All Vinyls to do some direct to vinyl sessions.
Wow.
Where people get an opportunity to have me record a song for them personally on a vinyl. So
that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. I might have to sing the same song 5 times in one day, but they'll each get their own copy of it. So.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. Well, thank you so much, James, for being on. And James's website is jamesleebaker.com, and that's where people can find everything they need to know about what's going on. Any other social media you would like to tell the audience about?
Yeah, you can find me pretty much anywhere. My handle for most places like Facebook and Instagram is James Lee Baker. On Twitter, I'm JL Baker Music. And then you can find my music anywhere where streaming or downloading is allowed or provided.
Well, thank you so much. I wish all the best to you, and we'll have to keep in touch, James.
Yeah, definitely do. Thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone, for supporting independent musicians. And everybody have a great evening. We'll talk to you later.
Sleepless nights, whispers of daydreams. Spoke of visions in your head. You saw a future of tradition built on this refuge in your bed. I cannot say I am a wanderer. I am anxious in my There are many people waiting along this solitary road. This is who I am, what I was born to do. What about you? What about you? Every day I wake up singing songs are whispered in my ear from a jealous God who made me to send a message loud and clear. But how could I ever see that? If I stay here with you, we were desperate, we were reckless to feel the drug of love received. Racing hearts and trembling touches, paralyzing human need. But I am bound to something greater that is not my own design. A ceaseless calling I must heed. Others seek but never find. Our paths they cross like stars, doomed from the start. How could we know? You should have known. Every day I wake up singing songs are whispered in my. Jealous God who made me send my message loud and clear. But how could I ever see that through if I stay here with you?
Desires of youth, reckless dear, so sincere.
present in the moment here with me. But now the moment's past, I don't know what to think. So can I go back to